Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Genesis chapter 32. I'm going to cover verses 22 through 32 and finish up the chapter. This is the section of Scripture where Jacob famously wrestles with God. Our context is this. In the last chapter, or actually in this chapter, the first 21 verses, Jacob prepared to meet Esau. You recall he divided his flocks and herds up into gifts to give to Esau because he's worried about Esau coming up to him there at Mahanaim, which is near where we are now, right across the Jabbok River. And he's worried about Esau coming up and killing him, and so he presented three ways of presents, if you will. He divided it up into three herds and put servants in the beginning of each herd, and he says, go tell my brother Esau, your servant Jacob wants to give you a present, my lord Esau, trying to butter him up with nice words and nice gifts. And then we see now where we are now in Genesis 32, Jacob's going to send the servants and his wives and his children on ahead to meet Esau, and he's going to hang back on the other side of the river Jabbok. So we start now in Genesis 32, verses 22 through 24. Now he, that's Jacob, arose that same night and took his two wives and his two maids and his 11 children. Two wives is Jacob, Rachel and Leah, and his two maids are Zilpah and Bilhah, and his 11 children, whom I will not name. That's all of the 12 patriarchs of Israel, except for Benjamin, who's not been born yet. And they crossed the ford of the Jabbok. Now the Jabbok River, as I mentioned in the last audio, it flows westward into the Jordan River from the east. It flows into the Jordan River about 20 miles north of the Dead Sea. Its current name is Wadi Zirka, as the NIV Study Bible says. And according to BibleAtlas.org, where Jacob was camped there, the two camps, Mahanaim, two camps, was right south of the Jabbok River. And if we're going to see here that we're going to find two other place names here, Peniel is one, or one other place name, I should say, Peniel. And the question is where is Peniel as opposed to Mahanaim, where the camp was, where Jacob's camp was? And it's questionable because there are question marks on the map. Then we got a problem of who's crossing the Jabbok River where, because at one point the Jabbok River, according to the map, takes a jog from north to south. Instead of moving straight from east to west, it moves north to south, and maybe Jacob and his family crossed the Jabbok River that way, going from west to east. I don't know, and it doesn't really matter. The point is that during the night, Jacob sent his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children, and he took them over the Jabbok River at a ford. He took them, verse 23, and sent them across the stream, and he sent across whatever he had. So he sent all of his possessions, the flocks, the presents for Esau, all of that. They all crossed the river, and I'm assuming that Jacob was then left alone on the other side, which would be probably the north side, but again, I don't know for sure. But Jacob was left on the other side of the Jabbok River by himself, which I assume it means is as soon as he ferried his family across, he went back across the ford of the Jabbok, and he was by himself on the other side of the river. Verse 24, Jacob was left, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. Jacob's alone, just like he was alone at Bethel, and God visited him at Bethel with the dream of Jacob's ladder, and now the angel of the Lord, or a man, it actually doesn't say angel of the Lord, I need to be careful here, it just says a man wrestled with Jacob. I'm going to assume it's the angel of the Lord, and I always assume the angel of the Lord is Jesus, and here the NIV Study Bible agrees with me, saying that this man was God himself, Jesus, in the form of an angel. Now Jacob later came to realize that it was God, because in verse 30 of this chapter we read this, Jacob then named the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face. Peniel means the face of God. For I've seen God face to face, he said, yet my life has been spared. So Jacob knew who he was wrestling with. This wasn't just an ordinary man. The book of Hosea confirms this. Hosea 12, verses 3 through 4. In the womb, he, that's Jacob, took his brother Esau by the heel, and in his maturity he contended with God. Referring to this incident here. Verse 4, Hosea 12. Yes, he wrestled with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. He found him at Bethel, and there he spoke with us. All right, so Hosea tells us also that Jacob is wrestling with God. This is not a mere man. Another way we know that this is not a mere man is by looking at verse 26 coming up shortly. Jacob asked to be blessed by the man. Well, if you're asking someone to bless you, it's probably God, not a man. As John Gill points out, Jacob would not ask a strange man in a wrestling match, please bless me. No, he knows it's God. Let me read that. Genesis 32, verse 26. Then he, that's the angel of the Lord, the man, who I say is the angel of the Lord. Then he said to Jacob, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So Jacob's asking the man to bless him because he knows he's God. Now in verse 24, we find out that Jacob is wrestling. Well, in Hebrew, there's a three-way pun here. Wrestled is Yaabek, Jacob is Yaakob, and Jabbok is Yabak. Three Hebrew words that sound remarkably close to each other. I don't know what that means. It's just kind of interesting. The meaning of this wrestling is what's more important. Jacob had used the strength of his flesh all of his life to wrestle with his foes. And now we're going to find out his flesh is not going to do him any good against the angel of the Lord because he's going to be wounded in his flesh, in his hip. He used his flesh to fight Esau when he tricked him into getting the birthright from Esau. And when he didn't trick Esau. He just drove a hard bargain with him. Then he tricked his father into confirming the transaction with the, I would say, fraudulent transfer of the birthright to Jacob. So that was trickery. That's his flesh. And Laban, he used his smarts to outsmart Laban in the matter of the sheep. Except I must say that he also gave God the credit all the way for doing that. So I'm not sure that that's a strong example of using the flesh to fight Laban. I think he did rely on God somewhat there. But at any rate, Jacob was a clever man. His name means deceiver, and that's just his reputation and probably the course of his early life. And now he's going to find out his flesh ain't going to do him a bit of good, not when he wants to get blessed by God. His flesh needs to be wounded if he wants to get blessed by God. He's wrestling with God, and he's going to learn that it wasn't his flesh that was going to win the battle in front of him, i.e. Esau. That was the trouble he was facing. He was facing extermination by his brother Esau, who 20 years earlier, when Jacob left Beersheba, Esau wanted to kill him. Now, there's a couple of options as to what the wrestling with the angel of the Lord meant. The first option is that this wrestling signified Jacob's fervent and importunate striving with God in prayer. Hosea 12:4 says this, yes, he wrestled with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. Wrestling by and seeking his favor. And I think that's perfectly obvious, actually. But another option as to the meaning of this, which is not necessarily mutually exclusive, is one that is offered by Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. Those commentators say that the wrestling incident was designed by God to revive Jacob's sinking spirit. The idea here is if Jacob can wrestle with God and prevail, he can sure beat Esau. John Gill and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown suggest that as a reason that God came to Jacob in the form of a man and wrestled him. Say, look, if you can beat me, you can beat Esau. Now, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown point out, there's much debate as to whether this was a vision or whether the wrestling was done in real life. In favor of the idea that the wrestling was done in real life is the fact that no mention in the text is made of a dream or a vision. That, of course, is an argument from silence, but it is interesting. Tends to favor that idea that this was an actual wrestling. However, there are others who say this was a vision. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say that Jacob would be too exhausted bodily to physically wrestle all night. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown also say that Jacob's mental anxiety about Esau could lead him to have a vision, because generally that's when God appears, is when we're all screwed up in our heads and worried. And besides, he'd had a vision before Jacob's ladder at Bethel. It's not surprising that he would have another vision. Some heavy hitters who favor the vision view, John Calvin, you of course have heard of him, and another famous Protestant theologian named Hengstenberg, whom I don't know too well, but I've heard the name thrown around. They believe it was a wrestling in a vision. I'll leave that for you to decide. The wrestling went on to daybreak. Now, it's not clear how long the wrestling was because we don't know what time of the night it started. It was the same night that Jacob had sent his family away. It might have been pretty late because preparing the family for crossing the Jabbok River would have taken a good while. But at any rate, he wrestled all night, the rest of the night, and then daybreak rose. Now we move on to Genesis 32, verse 25. When he, that's referring to the man, the angel of the Lord, saw that he had not prevailed against him, against Jacob, he touched, the angel of the Lord, touched the socket of Jacob's thigh. So the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Now, there's a bunch of third-person singular pronouns in here, and it's hard, at least for me, to distinguish which pronoun is referring to the angel of the Lord and which pronoun is referring to Jacob. The New Living Translation clearly shows which pronoun refers to whom. Genesis 32:25 in the New Living Translation says this, when the man saw That's the angel of the Lord. When the man saw that he couldn't win the match, he struck Jacob's hip and knocked it out of joint at the socket. So the angel of the Lord, ironically, is God, cannot win of the match. God cannot win a match. Well, obviously, God could have won the match if he had wanted to, but the point was he wanted to keep struggle, make Jacob struggle all night long so that Jacob would understand what it means to strive in his flesh all night long. And then, after having realized that you can't win a battle against God asking for blessing, please, God, bless me, please, God, bless me, you can't win that battle in your flesh. So the man says, okay, I'm not going to win the battle against you, Jacob, but now I'm going to knock your flesh out of joint. He knocks the hip joint out of whack at the socket. Now, what is the meaning of this? There's more application here, really, than is interpretation, because the destruction of Jacob's flesh in his hip is meant to show that Jacob's victory was only due to divine assistance. The only way he could have won that battle against the angel of Jehovah was not through his flesh. You're not going to beat God when you ask him for blessings through your flesh. If God had wanted to, he could have crushed Jacob instantly. So what we learn here is that in our victories, we have to be weak in the flesh. If we want to be blessed, we have to be weak in our flesh. We go now to Genesis 32, verse 26. Then he, that's the man, the angel of Jehovah, God, then he said, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. But he, that's referring to Jacob, said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Now we see here that Jacob's persistence resulted in blessing. We go to verse 29. We read, then Jacob asked him and said, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And he blessed him there. He blessed him there. So Jacob got what he wanted. He got his blessing, but only after his flesh was clobbered. Now, not let you go, that shows persistence in prayer. We recall Jesus teaching the parables of persistence in prayer. The man who's sleeping at night, and then his friend knocks on the door. Give me some food. Give me some bread. Give me some bread. Knock, 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 and you shall receive. The widow before the unjust judge. Judge, I want my judgment. I want my judgment. Give it to me. Nag, nag, nag. Persistent prayer. Don't give up. Jacob was persistent. He did not give up. And the reason he wanted a blessing was because he's facing death, not only by his death, but also his wives and maids' deaths, his 11 children's death, and also the extinguishment of the famous Abrahamic promise of offspring. He was in a bad situation, and he wanted blessing, and that's why he wrestled all night long to get it. What a great picture, a great type, if you will, of how Christians are supposed to be, weak in our flesh, begging God to bless us as we are faced with our innumerable difficulties in this life. Now, the dawn was breaking here. John Gill speculates as to why that's even mentioned by Moses as he writes this. It could be because Jacob needed to, or wanted to, see who this man was he was wrestling with so he can get an idea of what God looks like. And the man didn't want Jacob to see what God looks like because God did not want the visage of any particular man to be identified with divinity, with God. Well, that's a nice speculation, but, you know, Jesus was a particular man, and he became identified with God, and I don't think it created too much idolatry, perhaps, maybe with the icons. I don't know. I think that's a little bit speculative. I think it was mentioned for the same reason that Adam Clark says it was mentioned, because now that it's morning, it's time for Jacob to join his wives and children. And so the angel's saying, hey, quit wrestling with me. Quit wrestling with me. I will give you my blessing in just a minute. He doesn't say it here, but he says, quit wrestling me. It's time for you to go back to your wives and children. Jacob said, I'm not going to go back to my wives and children. I want you to bless me. Desperate man here. Desperate times call for desperate measures. Genesis 32, verses 27 and 28. So he, that's the angel of Jehovah, the angel of Yahweh, God, Jesus. So he said to him, said to Jacob, what is your name? And he, Jacob, said, Jacob. He, that's the angel of Jehovah, said, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Now, Jacob means deceiver. Israel means he struggles with God, as the NIV note says. So Jacob's name is changed here by the angel of Jehovah from deceiver to he struggles with God. And of course, the struggle was the struggle in order to obtain a blessing. God changed Jacob's name as soon as Jacob recognized him as Jacob's source of blessing, which obviously Jacob did. He kept saying, bless me, bless me, bless me. I'm not going to quit wrestling with you until you bless me. So he realized you're going to get blessed. It has to come from God, not from your deceptions and your flesh and your maneuverings and your tricks. So now, because Jacob's name is Israel, and that name is passed down to the nation of Israel, to the tribes of Israel, the nation of Israel is memorialized forever as the people who struggle with God. God, give me a blessing, give me a blessing. And of course, the blessing came in Jesus the Messiah, which unfortunately so many people of the nation of Israel or the people of Israel today don't recognize. More and more of them are, but still it's one of the tragic ironies of human history, tragedies of human history, that so many Jews have rejected their Messiah who loves them so much. Now, the angel of Jehovah said, Israel, or Jacob, Israel, you have striven with God and with men. Well, what men has Jacob striven with? Well, it's interesting. I couldn't find any commentator that bothered to mention that. That happens to me a lot. I think about things the commentators don't really think is important. I guess they figure it's obvious, but it wasn't obvious to me. It could be that, this is just my speculations, take it with a grain of salt, it could be that God is referring to Jacob struggling with Esau and Laban. Now, he did. He had struggled mightily with Esau, and he struggled mightily with Laban, and so the angel of Jehovah might have been referring to that. I think that's what it is. It could be this, that you have striven with God and with men. You've striven with God because I, the angel of Jehovah, am God, and you struggled with men because I, the angel of Jehovah, has appeared to you in a human form. And then, of course, it says with men, but it means with the single man that he's struggled with, wrestled with, the angel of Jehovah represents all of mankind. That, I think, is a reasonable supposition as to what's being meant here, but I don't think that's what it is. I think it means you struggle with Jacob and Esau. I don't know. We go to Genesis 32, verse 29. Then Jacob asked the angel of Jehovah and said, please tell me your name. But he, the angel of Jehovah, said, why is it that you ask my name? And he, the angel of Jehovah, blessed him, Jacob, there. Now, asking God what his name is, as the NIV Study Bible says, is both unworthy and impossible to fulfill. We have another instance where a biblical character asked the angel of Jehovah what his name was. This is referring to Samson's mother, Manoah, in Judges 13, 17, and 18. Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, what is your name, so that when your words come to pass, we may honor you? But the angel of the Lord said to him, I said mother, I meant to say Samson's father. But the angel of the Lord said to him, to Manoah, why do you ask my name, seeing it is wonderful? The word wonderful is translated in the NASB margin as incomprehensible. Why do you ask my name, seeing it is incomprehensible? Well, the angel of Jehovah didn't feel like answering that. The angel of Jehovah said, why is it that you ask my name? In other words, forget it, buddy. I'm not going to tell you my name. But he did do this. He didn't tell him his name, but he blessed him there. Now, Jacob knew that the man was God of whom he asked, what is your name? Because he had asked to be blessed. So he knew it was God, but he just wanted to have a name for this man who represented God to Jacob. This is a logical request. The man had just asked Jacob what his name was. Well, why can't he in return ask God what his name is? Well, it's because he's God. You don't ask God what his name is. Why did Jacob want to know the man's name? Well, Gill says that Jacob's just naturally curious. Or it could be, as Gill speculates also, that Jacob wanted a name so as to better remember the encounter. For example, at Bethel, he called him the God of Bethel. Actually, God called himself that. At the time of Jacob's latter vision, God says, I am the God of Bethel. So Jacob was looking for a name to call this. What's your name here, angel of Jehovah? It could be that Jacob wanted to know the name so that Jacob could better call on God when trouble came. The angel said, my name is Sam. So then Jacob could say, Sam, help me when he gets in trouble. I don't know, but whatever. The reason was that Jacob wanted to know the name. He didn't get it. Now, here are some options as to why God did not give Jacob God's name. Option number one, Jacob may have been led into idolatry of the creature. Adam Clark points out that the doctrine of the incarnation wasn't understood back then, and so Jacob could have said, well, there's God. Okay, there's God. He's a human being. I'm going to worship God, and God is nothing but a human being. He's merely a human being. So maybe God did not want Jacob to be tempted in that direction. Another reason that Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown speculate as to why God didn't give Jacob God's name was so that Jacob would not get cocky over his wrestling victory. Jacob might think he could make the angel do whatever Jacob pleased. Hey, Sam, do this. Hey, Sam, do that. You know, like people that rub the lantern and out comes the green genie. God says, no, you're not going to treat me like a genie. I helped you now, but the rest of your life's got to be by faith, not by divine theophanies, divine appearances in the midst of your troubles. I might do it every now and then, but I'm not going to do it at your command. You're not going to call me by my name. We go to Genesis 32, verse 30. So Jacob named the place Peniel, for he said, I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved. Peniel means face of God, as the NIV notes does. And so that's why Jacob named it that, because he had seen God face to face, the face of God. He'd seen the face of God, so he named the place Peniel. A city was built there afterwards. Judges 8:8, we read about that. He went up from there to Penuel, which is the same thing as Peniel, and spoke similarly to them. And the men of Penuel answered him just as the men of Succoth had answered. That's in some battle, which I don't remember in Judges. We'll get to it eventually. Now, if you look at BibleAtlas.org's map, Peniel is marked very close to Mahanaim, which meant double camp, which is where Jacob had camped on the Jabbok River as he was fleeing from Laban. Both Peniel and Mahanaim are both marked with a question mark, so it's not exactly sure where they are, but they're somewhere near where the Jabbok River runs into the Jordan River, and that's kind of the area where we are. Now, notice in verse 30, Jacob says, yet my life has been preserved. I have seen God face to face. Yet, even though I have seen God face to face, even despite that, my life has been preserved. Now, why does he say that? Because normally you see God to face, you get toasted, you get fried, you don't survive. And so Jacob's saying, whoa, I saw God, and yet my life has been preserved. Well, of course, Jacob leaves out a little important fact here. He saw God in an incarnate form, either in a dream or actually in an actual physical presence, but it would be God incarnate. God's divinity would be veiled. I mean, lots of people saw Jesus in his incarnate form, and they didn't get killed because they were not looking at God the Father, who was not veiled in, whose divinity was not veiled by human flesh. So I don't know how theologically astute Jacob was about that, but looking at it in hindsight, we know that's why he wasn't toasted, because he didn't see God face to face. He just saw him in an incarnate form. Now, back in the Old Testament, it was believed that to see the face of God meant death. The Old Testament characters did know that you could see God's back or his feet or his form and live, but you just couldn't see him face to face. Let's look at some of these scriptures. Genesis 16:13. Then she, this is referring to Hagar, called the name of the Lord who spoke to her. You are a God who sees, for she said, have I even remained alive here after seeing him? Well, in Genesis 16, Hagar saw the angel of the Lord. Again, that's the incarnate God in incarnate form, Jesus. And so, yeah, you can remain alive after seeing Jesus. But these Old Testament characters didn't realize that. I don't think they understood the doctrine of the incarnation, as Adam Clark said. Exodus 24:10, and they saw the God of Israel, and under his feet there appeared to be a pavement of sapphire as clear as the sky itself. This is referring to Israel's elders. They didn't see God face to face, but they saw his feet. Under his feet there appeared to be a pavement of sapphire. It's okay, you see his feet, just can't see him face to face. Exodus 33:18-20. Then Moses said, I pray you, show me your glory. Now Moses is talking straight to Yahweh here. Show me your glory. And he, God, said, I myself will make all my goodness pass before you and will proclaim the name of the Lord before you. And I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious and will show compassion on whom I will show compassion. But, he said, you cannot see my face, for no man can see me and live. So God says, forget about seeing my glory face to face, Moses. You're not going to do that. A few verses later, about three verses later, in Exodus 33, God then graciously tells Moses, then I will take my hand away, and you, Moses, shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen. So you see, you can see God's back, but you can't see him face to face. Judges 6, and of course this is speaking metaphorically, God doesn't have a back. But the idea is God's glory is so great, you have to see him sort of in an indirect fashion you can see him. Judges 6, 22-23, when Gideon saw that he was the angel of the Lord, he said, alas, O Lord God, notice how Gideon calls the angel of the Lord, O Lord God, for now I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. The Lord said to him, peace to you, do not fear, you shall not die. See, Gideon thought he was going to die because he saw the Lord face to face, but Gideon didn't realize that he was looking at the angel of the Lord. He was not looking at God the Father straight on. The angel of the Lord is the incarnate Jesus. Judges 13:22, so Manoah, who was Samson's father, said to his wife, we shall surely die, for we have seen God. But actually, again, that was the angel of the Lord whom they had seen. Jesus' divinity was veiled by the flesh. But notice, they thought they were going to die because they had seen God. Surely die. That's what they thought back then, not understanding fully the doctrine of the incarnation. Numbers 12:8, with him, Moses, God's talking about, I speak mouth to mouth, even openly and not in dark sayings. And he, Moses, beholds the form of the Lord. So Moses beheld the form of the Lord, but he didn't see the face of the Lord. All right, well, that was an interesting digression, a little rabbit trail on seeing God face to face at Peniel, which means face of God, yet Jacob's life was preserved. Jacob was encouraged here because if he could wrestle with God and live, he could wrestle Esau and live. My life has been preserved. I wrestled with God and didn't die. Well, daggone, I can wrestle with Esau and not die. We go to verses 31 and 32, and we'll finish this audio. Now the sun rose upon him, upon Jacob, just as he crossed over Peniel, that's Peniel, same thing, and he was limping on his thigh. Therefore to this day the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh and the sinew of the hip. Now the sun rising there is a perfect symbol of God's goodwill and favor shining down upon Jacob. It's very poetic. I don't know if it was meant to be poetic, but it is. Some actually say that Malachi, in his famous verse in Malachi 4:2, was referring to this sunrise. John Gill and Adam Clark mentioned this. Malachi says in chapter 4, verse 2, "But for you who fear my name, the Sun of Righteousness will rise with healing in its wings." That's S-U-N, Sun. Sun of Righteousness will rise with healing in its wings, and you will go forth and skip about like calves from the stall. Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if Malachi was thinking about that, about this little incidental detail. Maybe so. He was limping on his thigh. John Gill says there's no evidence either way of whether Jacob was healed before he died or whether he limped until he died. We don't know. But we do know that this was a reminder to keep Jacob humble after his encounter with God. Jacob was wounded in his flesh. This is a perfect symbol of how we are weak in the flesh. Paul was also wounded in his flesh. He was wounded with his thorn in the flesh. When? After he'd received great revelations. We read this in 2 Corinthians 12:7. "Because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, for this reason, to keep me from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself." Now, people debate what this thorn in the flesh is. I think it's a messenger of Satan. I think it's some of these people that bedeviled Paul in his ministry, these heretics, these strife causers. But whoever it was, or whatever it was, the point is, it wounded Paul in his flesh to keep Paul from getting the big head. He had just had all these revelations from God. And I'm telling you, it's a good thing to remember when you have a great big victory, big spiritual breakthrough, what's the devil going to look at to do to you? Bring you down by making you pride, because pride is probably the number one cause of human sin, or the number one manifestation of human sin. Pride, human pride. It's like Milton said about the devil, he'd rather rule in hell and submit to God in heaven, because he was too darn proud to say that he had to be a servant rather than a king. Well, if you'll keep yourself wounded in your flesh, then it won't be necessary for God to do it anymore, but he will. If you follow Jesus and you start getting proud, you watch. I'm speaking from personal experience here, and every Christian can tell you this. God will wound you in your flesh because he cares for you. He doesn't want you to be proud, because pride goes before a fall. Now, verse 32 says, "Till this day, Jews do not eat the sinew of the hip." Sinew is the New American Standard Bible translation. Holman Christian Study Bible has the thigh muscle. I don't know whether it's a ligament, a tendon, or a muscle. I don't know. It's something around the hip. Apparently the Jews didn't know either, as I'll show you from a quote from John Gill. But "to this day" means to the day that Moses wrote the book of Genesis, which is roughly, I don't know, in the mid-15th century B.C., or maybe near the end of the mid-15th century B.C., somewhere around there, assuming the early date of the Exodus, which I do assume. Now, let's see what Gill, the rabbinic expert, has to say about the fact that Jews don't eat the sinews or the muscles of the thigh. Quote, "They have a whole chapter in one of their treatises in the Mishnah, giving rules concerning it, where it is forbidden to eat of it," whether the "it" is means the thigh muscles, thigh sinews, "whether in the land of Israel or out of it, whether in common food or sacrifices, even in burnt offerings it was taken out, and whether in cattle of the house or of the field, and both in the right and left thigh, but not in fowls, because they have no hollow, and butchers are not to be trusted, and whoever eats of it to the quantity of an olive is to be beaten with 40 stripes." Now that's a good one. You eat the hip thigh muscle, 40 stripes. Ooh. "And because the Jews are more ignorant of this nerve, as Mercer observes, therefore they abstain from all nerves and the posteriors of animals. Leo of Medina says, of what beast soever they eat, they are very careful to take away all the fat in the sinew which shrunk, and hence it is that in many places in Italy, and especially in Germany, they eat not at all of the hinder quarters of ox, lamb, or goat, because there is in those parts of the beast both very much fat and also the forbidden sinew. And it asketh so much care to cleanse the parts of these, that there are few that are able to do it, or dare to undertake it. Well, we can see this hip muscle has caused the Jews a whole heap of concern. Of course, that's physical. The Jews, they love to take physical things and hang on to the physical and not move on to the spiritual application, which is to be crucified in your flesh, to be wounded in your flesh. Ladies and gentlemen, with those words, we now finish chapter 32 of Genesis. That prepares us now to go ahead to Genesis 33, verses 1 through 20. In those verses, in our next audio, we will see Jacob as he meets Esau. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.